special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Chicken in. Here we are live on the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the Go Long Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, James Bell, the lead boxing analyst for the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and here on Go Long Media. Check out our social media accounts on Facebook, The Boxing Source, on Instagram will be The Boxing Source, and on Twitter, on Boxing Source 2, and we will have a playlist coming up on YouTube with the Boxing Source where you can catch the previous podcasts that we have had, you know, over the course of the past few weeks, you know, probably, and I'll most likely add in more shows from the archives onto that playlist as well, so you'll be able to catch up to it. And once you, you know, subscribe to that channel, you'll be able to get the updates on the podcast that will be added on to it. So we will have a pretty full show here. We're going to be going for 1 hour live session. We will have a segment in here where we will be talking about what happened over the course of the week. Specifically with the announcement of the retirement of the of Andre Ward. So we'll be getting into that here in a little bit. But before we do that, I wanted to, you know, get in a quick commercial here, and then we're going to get right into the boxing talk. So be sure to catch us here. If you want to call in to participate in the boxing talk, the number is 347-237-5539. Once again, that is 347-237-5539. This is the Boxing Source Radio Show on the Go Long Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, all, this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida, great licensed, certified specialists, and guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today, 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
All right, we are back here on the Boxing Source Radio Show on the Go Long Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Like I said, the number to dial in here, 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press 1 key to get on queue. you'll be able to talk it live on the show. Pretty much, like I said, had a full slate of action here. As we had a good number of fights going on over the weekend, I had something going on, a few things going on with the World Boxing Super Series. You had a few world title fights that happened on, you know, Friday and Saturday. And one notable fighter was on part of a card here over the weekend. So we wanted to, you know, get those results in there. So just want to go through all of that here first before, you know, we get into the more detailed talk of, you know, specific fights and specific news and notes in the sports world. First off, I wanted to, you know, get in a couple of fights that, you know, happened in on Friday, as ESPN had another telecast for Top Rank. So you had Top Rank on ESPN. You had a few fights on there that included a two WBO titles on the line. Of course, you know, I've had a thing about the WBO title, pretty much like kind of nicknaming it the Top Rank title, specifically because of a lot of the fighters on there on the Top Rank banner have a WBO title there. So, but in reference to this ESPN telecast, you had the super middleweight title on the line with undefeated Gilberto Ramirez going up against Jesse Hart. And he also had the world featherweight title on there with Oscar Valdez going up against Genesis Cerrone. Gilberto Ramirez was able to get a unanimous decision win over Jesse Hart to stay undefeated, 36-0, while Jesse Hart suffered his first loss of his career there. So he went down to 22-1. This was Jesse Hart's first world title fight, but he was unable to get the title from Gilberto Zerto Ramirez there. So you have Gilberto Ramirez still holding the WBO super middleweight championship after getting it last year over Arthur Abraham. So that was one WBO title that was able to be defended. And on the main event there on ESPN, you had Oscar Valdez undefeated 22-0 going up against Genesis Cerrone, who is 29-0. So there you also had a matchup of two undefeated fighters. And this also was Cerrone's first, you know, first defense or first time trying to get a world championship against Oscar Valdez. Of course, you know, a lot of people were talking about Oscar Valdez and his overall potential there in the featherweight division. This was Valdez's third defense of that WBO title, and Valdez was able to score the unanimous decision win over Genesis Cerrone, pretty much moving himself actually to 23-0. So you have Oscar Valdez being able to win there against Genesis Cerrone. And then on Saturday, we had a few fights, including one fight that was in the World Boxing Super Series with Junior Dordicos defending the WBA Cruiserweight Championship in the Alamo Dome in San Antonio against Dmitry Kudryashov, actually. You know, it pretty much messed it up anyway. There, Dordicos was able to get a second-round knockout over Dmitry there to retain the WBA Cruiserweight Championship and stay undefeated at 22-0. And part of that same card, you also had Nonito Donaire actually get a win over Ruben Garcia Hernandez to get a minor title in the WBC at featherweight. So those two fights there were part of that card in San Antonio. And you also had Jorge Linares defend his title against Luke Campbell over in Inglewood, California. That was on HBO. Linares was able to get the win there over Luke Campbell by a split decision to move to 43-3-0, and Campbell fell to 17-2, and we also have like a couple of other results as well. Just wanted to get make sure that I got area code 240 in here. So 240, what's wrong with you?
Hey, what's good, bro? It's Jack Space.
Hey, what's good there, Jack, man? How you been doing?
Hanging in there, champ.
Good, man. Go ahead.
I missed boxing this weekend, but I did want to join in, and when you guys get to Andre Ward retiring, I'll chime in on that topic.
Yeah, true that. So, yeah, I'll be able to get into that here in a little bit. With another segment, just running through, you know, what was going on here over the course of the weekend. Like I was saying there with that lightweight title fight with Linares and Campbell there, where Linares is able to, you know, get the win over Luke Campbell there by a split decision. And also we had another WBO title on the line earlier on Saturday with the WBO heavyweight title. Joseph Parker defending it against the number one contender at the time, Huey Fury. This was over in the Manchester Arena over in England. And there, two undefeated fighters. You had, you know, Parker there, 23-0, Fury at 20-0. And that fight ended up going to decision, and it was a majority decision win for Joseph Parker, where Parker was able to keep the WBO heavyweight titles there. Actually, I wanted to start there first because that was one of the first fights that, you know, I wanted to basically focus on, especially after, you know, watching the fight. I was able to watch that fight, and to me, looking at the scores, wanted to get into the scores there. You had Judge John Madfus scoring about 118-110, and Terry O'Connor scoring about 118-110 for Joseph Parker, while Rocky Young scored about 114-114 draw. Now, Parker and Fury there, I mean, I had it. I just watched that fight, and it looked like, you know, Huey Fury was, you know, able to execute, you know, the plan that he wanted to execute at the beginning of the fight. He was the taller fighter there at 6'6", had the longer reach against Joseph Parker, and was able to use the jab, specifically within the first three rounds. He was able to utilize the jab very well, fight off his back foot, and, you know, kind of like nullify what Joseph Parker was able to do. Is, you know, Parker was, you know, following him around the ring, you know, while Huey Fury was backing up. But here in this case, I thought that, you know, Parker didn't seem to me to be that much effective with what he was trying to do until the late rounds, like after rounds 8 or 9 or so. And then he was able to get to the body of Huey Fury. He was able to get a couple of good right hands in, but, you know, that only happened when Fury was dropping his activity in reference to the amount of jabs that he was throwing while he was fighting off his back foot. So, you know, once he was, you know, doing that or fighting off his back foot, he was fairly successful in what he wanted to do in the ring against Joseph Parker. There, as far as I was concerned. And, you know, there was nothing where, you know, neither fighter was seriously hurt. You know, nothing where neither fighter was, you know, in any big trouble. According to many, that there was the thing was where I just didn't necessarily see where, you know, the champion himself did very much in the fight. But we all have that whole little saying there where it was, you know, you have to do enough to beat the champion. And to me, I felt like Huey Fury did enough to beat Joseph Parker. There wasn't nothing that showed where Joseph Parker was, pushing his type of or his strategy in this particular fight against Huey Fury. So I just thought he had the advantage there. So to me, I just didn't see it as something where it could have been an even fight or it could have been a close fight. I just saw it to where, you know, Fury was able to utilize the jab, utilize his reach, kind of like nullify most of the punches going up to, you know, his head that Joseph Parker was throwing, and that Joseph Parker was still just trying to figure out how to get to Huey Fury while Huey Fury was backing up, because there was a lot of instances where Fury was, you know, able to have Parker miss the punches that he was throwing. So when it went to the, scorecards, I just didn't see Joseph Parker winning, you know, more than six rounds. I thought that Huey Fury was going to be able to have it to where he was able to pull that particular fight out. So, you know, in that instance, I just didn't feel that Joseph Parker was able to, you know, get that particular win there. But the judges, judges just had it to where Parker had 10 rounds scored for 2 rounds for Tyson Fury. So Joseph Parker, you know, retains the WBO title there. Not sure, like, I'll have to check here who the next guy in line is in reference to the WBO. Well, you have Christian Hammer there at number 2, so, but I don't think that Parker may go after Christian Hammer. I'd like to see him go up against Jarrell Miller, see if Jarrell Miller will get that shot for that WBO title, you know, even though Miller may seem like he wants to have another fight in between that time, you know, that Joseph Parker will be available for his next fight. So that's how I pretty much decipher that, you know, particular situation there with the WBO heavyweight championship. Jack, just real quick, were you able to catch any highlights there of that particular fight?
Nah, I did see some highlights from the Donaire fight, though. And the fight that I can't pronounce the dude's name, but he's with Aris Landy Lara's team. Lara and Rigondeaux were out there supporting him. I think his last name begins
with Dordico.
Pulled off of Vigor. Yep.
Yeah, the one that was on that World Boxing Super Series. Yeah.
Yep.
Because I was able to, you know, actually catch that thing on the World Boxing Super Series website. You know, they're able to show that particular fight there. So, you know, I was able to catch that there with Junior Dodikos defending his title against, you know, against Dmitry Kudryashov. So, it just looked like there that Dordikos was, you know, on the string of his KO streak. I mean, he's had a knockout in every fight of his career except for one against Edison Miranda. And I guess he was able to, you know, have that regular cruiserweight championship there with that being on the line. He was the interim WBA cruiserweight champion there, winning it last year, but this fight here against Dmitry was for the WBA Cruiserweight title, and it just looked like he was, you know, much better than Dmitry. He was the, you know, the taller fighter, had the reach and pretty much used that reach and was able to get Kudryashov with that right hand, and that right hand just ended up having Dmitry crumble to the canvas there, and Dordikos was able to score that knockout.
Yeah, that was a pretty solid knockdown.
Yep, that was something there. So he's going to be, you know, moving forward in that World Boxing Super Series tournament. I have to see here because this was, I think, the next. That was the second thing there for. Yeah, what's the second one? in that quarterfinals there for the cruiserweight. So he's waiting on the winner of Gassiev versus Lajerzyk, or Lajerzyk, actually. That's going to be October 21st at the Prudential Center there. So that's going to be the next fight that's on the cruiserweight. That won't be the next fight on the cruiserweight schedule. Excuse me. The next fight on the schedule is next week with Maris Brightus against Mike Perez. So that's going to be an intriguing fight there, with Mike Perez moving down to cruiserweight to fight Maris Brightus there over in Latvia. So, you know, the winner of that particular fight will be going up against Alexander Usyk, while the Garcia fight, the winner of that fight, will go up against Junior Dodikos. So be interested to see what happens there in that particular matchup in that case. But, you know, on the thing in reference to Nonita Donaire, Donaire was able to, you know, score the win over Ruben Garcia Hernandez, and he got like a unanimous decision win to get a, you know, a minor featherweight championship for the WBC. People were talking about, you know, with him getting that silver title, that may put him, you know, next in line for Gary Russell Jr., as Gary Russell Jr. is a WBC featherweight champion. But, I mean, to me, after, you know, Donaire was able to get that fight against Rigondeaux, and there he lost that fight against Rigondeaux, and then after that, you know, he came up against Nicholas Walters and got knocked out in that particular fight. And then he was, you know, trying to get a championship. He was able to get a super bantamweight championship and defend it once before losing it to Jesse Magdaleno last year. So this one here, he was just coming back since that loss to Magdaleno and moving up to featherweight. So, I mean, I'm not sure if he gets this chance here, you know, against Gary Russell Jr., but if he does, then that might be, you know, a little issue there with Gary Russell and his speed and how he, you know, how he fights.
Yeah, I think Nonito definitely needed that win. I mean, if he came up short, man, then it'd be time to start thinking about retirement for him. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if he can climb back up the ranks.
Yeah, it would be. I'd like to see if he'll be able to get another opportunity at a world title there. But if he does and he's not successful, then that may be, you know, it as far as like his career is concerned. I thought the fight against Magdaleno would have been his last fight that he would have here, but he was able to come back and have a few more fights after that Nicholas Walters thing there. And then here, even after losing to Jesse Magdaleno, he was able to, you know, get another fight in that instance. So, I mean, that's just something there where, I mean, he's just, you know, trying to get back into the thick of things. I'm not sure where he falls into as far as, like, promotional things are concerned. I mean, this, you know, World Boxing Super Series card was, done by Sarlin and Ring Star Sports, who was hit by Richard Schaefer. So maybe Schaefer can line him up for another good fight. Now, wanted to get into the card that was on HBO, where the main event had Jorge Linares against Luke Campbell. And in this fight, I was like going into this thing thinking that Linares was going to be able to, you know, pretty much outclass Luke Campbell. And it kind of like looked like that in the first few rounds or so. He was able to, you know, he was able to score a knockdown against Luke Campbell, and it looked like he was going to have the advantage. But then Campbell started to get back into the fight. He started to use his length and use his reach pretty well and get to Linares in a few rounds there. But Linares was able to retain his title. He is the you know, the lineal lightweight champion, and, you know, was still held as the WBA champion. So he was able to keep that WBA championship as well. I'm not necessarily sure. He says that he was talking about trying to get a fight between him and Mikey Garcia as a unification fight. That fight was, like, kind of talked about, you know, before Mikey Garcia even moved up to fight Adrian Broner at 140 pounds. So, Linares, it looks like Linares is the type of guy that, you know, kind of like does things, a few things very well, but still has a lot of holes. And, you know, in the HBO telecast, that's what, you know, what was talked about. It was like, there was like, people could consider him being one of those top guys for pound, but there's like, you know, a couple occasions where he just leaves himself open to, you know, open to shots here and there. So I just didn't, you know, see where he could have completely outclassed Luke Campbell there. But, you know, Campbell's amateur background and, you know, being a successful guy in the Olympics kind of like carried over here in the professional ranks, where he was able to hang with Jorge Linares in order to keep the fight close. But Linares was able to, you know, pull off the win here. Now, I have another caller here, area code 205. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's going on, James? It's Mike Grady, man.
Doing good here, Mike, doing good. Just, you know, went through, you know, most of the results that happened over the course of the weekend, you know, including Joseph Parker's decision win over Huey Fury, and you had Gilberto Ramirez retaining his super middleweight title. You had also, you know, this thing here with Jorge Linares and Luke Campbell. So I just pretty much went through most of those fights there.
Yeah. So I didn't watch the Joseph Campbell, Joseph Parker fight, nor did I watch the Ramirez fight. And I did watch the, what's the last guy that you?
Linares Campbell?
Yeah, I did watch Linares fight, but I didn't watch it, like, with a critical eye. What I did see early, this is only just me, like, not paying a lot of attention to the fight and like, looking away and looking at the fight. But early it seemed like he looked, you know, I guess he dropped him earlier in the fight, but then Campbell was pretty resilient, and or Linares either faded or something. But as you said, you know, he has certain deficiencies which allow him to get hit, which is why he probably ain't outclassing guys who people expect him to outclass. But I didn't watch it enough with a critical eye to give a, you know, educated opinion, other than I saw that, I mean, Campbell was, you know, still trying to fight and win. But body language, like I had the TV on mute too, so I wasn't even listening to the announcers, but body
yeah,
language.
Yeah, to the comments,
did,
bit, yeah.
Yeah, but body language did look weird for Linares, though. I mean, you could tell he knew he was in the fight, at least with it being on mute and the comments. I didn't have it on mute, like, for any particular reason, because I would prefer to hear the comments and then just visibly drown them out. Like, I think my cable box is messing up because the sound ain't coming out. The picture's showing, but the sound ain't. It didn't come out. So I watched the Canelo fight the second time without the sound, which I wanted to hear the comments. I wanted to see who they favored, which I'm sure they favored Golovkin, by looking at the guy's scorecard, who always favor pressure fighters.
Yeah, they kind of side with that a lot. Yeah, they kind of, like, side with that a lot as far as, like, you know, overall aggression. But, you know, it has to be, like, something to where either it was very effective against its opponent, or the opponent didn't do enough to, you know, kind of, like, keep them at bay. So, I mean, my thing is that, you know, with that particular fight, I just, you know, felt like Golovkin did enough to get that win there. But in reference to these other fights, you said that you're able to get a little bit of that Linares-Campbell fight.
I did talk about the super middleweight championship fight between Gilberto Ramirez and Jesse Hart that was part of the, I think it was part of that top rank card. They had that, you know, the main event there where it was the WBO featherweight championship on the line with Oscar Valdez against Genesis Savanya. And, you know, with this being in Tucson, Arizona, there was a lot of people there that were, you know, supporting Oscar Valdez. It was almost like kind of like a homecoming for him. But here he was going up against, you know, Savanya, who was there in his first world title fight. I think a few people kind of like expected Valdez to kind of like show off his skills or whatnot. Against Savanya, but Savanya was there. He was right there in front of him. You know, even though Valdez was a more talented fighter or whatever it is, Savanya was still right there in front of him, still taking a lot of his punches. And Valdez, like, had himself open to a lot of shots and ended up being knocked down on, you know, one punch while he was backing up. So he got hit with the right hand. And while backing up and ended up falling down to the canvas and had a knockdown suffered there. But then in the next round, he was able to turn right back and, you know, get a good shot in to knock down Genesis Savanya. And, you know, even though Savanya was still game and still, you know, right in front of Oscar Valdez, he didn't necessarily do enough to try to keep that fight close. And so Valdez was able to stay undefeated, getting a unanimous decision win over Savanya to, you know, keep that WBO featherweight belt. I mean, I thought it was a pretty, you know, pretty good fight between those two, but there with Oscar Valdez, I think there was still, you know, a lot for him to work on in this particular matchup before he fights, you know, some of the better guys that are in that featherweight division, whether it's Carl Frampton or you know, Santa Cruz, after Santa Cruz and Abner Morris kind of like get their whole thing situated. So there's like, you know, a few guys there in that featherweight division that may give Oscar Valdez a lot of issues there if he's not able to clean himself up, where he kind of like leaves himself, you know, open to the right hand. He kind of like drops his left a lot once he throws his combinations. So, but was either of y'all able to catch the highlights from that fight?
No, I didn't catch it.
Okay, gotcha. You know, before I was going to go into, like, you know, my next segment here, you know, about Andre Ward, I just did want to touch on the whole thing with, you know, Joseph Parker, man, because, you know, to me, Parker and you know, Mike Grady, you kind of, like, mentioned this, you know, a good amount of times. So ever since he, you know, won the heavyweight title, he kind of didn't look, you know, very impressive. He is undefeated there at 24-0, but, you know, in his past couple of fights, he hasn't really, you know, performed very well. He had that first defense against Razvan Gojanu, you know, when he wasn't able to fight Huey Fury at first because, you know, that Fury fight was supposed to be on May 6th, but Huey Fury suffered an injury, and so they had somebody therefore, Parker to fight for that first date that was set on May 6th, and he didn't look very impressive there against somebody that was, I guess, a former sparring partner. And then here against Huey Fury, it looked like Fury kind of like executed his thing there where he was able to throw the jab, you know, be able to, you know, utilize that jab to keep Joseph Parker at bay and not, you know, really have Parker really get to him all too tough there in that particular fight. But when I saw that two judges had their scores at you know, 118, 110. I just couldn't believe it because there was no way that, you know, Joseph Parker had it to the effect where he was winning that many, even close to that many rounds there. And it was like a, to me, it was almost like an uneventful type of match between the two where, you know, there was no, you know, there was no serious shots from either fighter that had either Parker or Fury in serious trouble. You know, no serious cuts on either guy that, you know, could have had, you know, either Parker or Fury kind of like focus on it. So, I mean, I just don't know where it was able to be a 10 rounds to two fight in favor of Joseph Parker there.
So do you think that now that we've got, 2 weeks in a row of questionable, well, I don't want to say questionable, I mean, because I didn't see it, but I'm going off of your judgment, right? 2 weeks in a row where you've got a judge or two judges going 10-2 essentially the other way. Do you think we're going to see the same kind of backlash as we did with Golovkin-Canelo? I mean, I'm not saying, you know, I mean, obviously I expect more people to watch the Golovkin-Canelo fight, but
mm-hmm.
you know, the YouTubers that are covering it, do you think we're going to see the same kind of outrage from those guys?
Well, maybe it will be from some of the YouTubers or, you know, what do you call it, the YouTube boxing community or whatever it is. I've seen it in social media that, you know, a lot of people that did catch the fight, you know, really were, you know, upset about, you know, that whole 10-2 score because they kind of like felt the same way that I did that, you know, Fury was able to do what he could do with that jab and kind of like set the pace with it, and that it was like the overall that it was an overall factor in how the fight, you know, turned out. If Joseph Parker was going to be able to nullify the jab of Fury or get through it. But, I mean, to me, it just didn't feel like Parker was able to nullify the jab of Fury or do something that seriously hurt Fury. Did he get a couple of good shots in a couple of times? Yes, and like, you know, the second half or the, you know, basically the back half of the fight around like the eighth and ninth round, he was able to get a good couple of right hands in and whatnot, but nothing really serious to, you know, put Fury in serious trouble to where he was seriously hurt or where he was able to, you know, get his bearings back. So in that case, I just, you know, didn't feel like, you know, a 10-2 round was warranted in any case in this particular fight.
So I guess the bigger question is, right? Why, you know, this is for anybody on the line, but why do we think there's such a disconnect between judges and fans and how they view the outcome of fights?
Well, I've said it like a few weeks ago or so, where I kind of said to where the judges kind of view the fight different than a lot of us because they don't view it, you know, they don't view it on TV. They view it, you know, on ringside. So in ringside, depending on where they are, if they're like, you know, right on a set of ring or if they're like in another side of the ring ropes, they don't see the kind of views that we see on camera. There's like four or five cameras, you know, that are around the ring. So we may be able to see punches that the judges themselves aren't going to be able to see. So we could see a punch that, you know, that didn't necessarily affect the guy that was getting punched, but the judges may see it differently. They may see it, you know, as something that may have landed when it didn't really land, or that it had more effect on them than it kind of like looked on TV. So they kind of had it to where it is, that's where you have such a polarizing view on scorecards between judges and those that, like, watch the fight as a fan or watch the fight pretty much as neutral, because the judges themselves don't see it how we see it on TV. And it kind of, like, goes both ways. When you see a fight live, you go into a stadium or whatever it is, you may see a fight differently than if you saw it on TV because of the way that you view the fight. You're not going to be able to view the fight, you know, in different angles. You're not going to be able to see the punches up close because you're not right there in the ring, like how the cameras are. So I think that's kind of like, you know, why it's kind of like different for judges to score a fight than people who watch it, you know, on TV.
So,
and I,
who do you think has the advantage on that? Like, do you think the fans have the advantage of TV, or do you think the judges have the advantage of being right close in ringside?
I don't know. I would kind of like, it would be interesting to me to see if there is a way for judges to kind of like view the fight using the angles that the cameras give you instead of viewing it at ringside. You may be able to see things differently if you saw the different angles that the camera gives you than you watching it, you know, live right there in the ring. I think that, you know, would kind of like affect things, so to speak. So maybe, you know, if I ask a judge or somebody that's in the athletic commission, if that's the case.
Yeah, but then you go ahead, bro.
Yeah, I'm gonna answer your first question. I agree with James in his assessment that we do have the panoramic vision. We have the ability to see it from all sides, and the judges are limited in their view. Like if you're behind somebody and somebody throws a punch that lands on the glove, but you're behind the person or whatever the right angle, it looks like the punch landed. But I also think that it's a coin flip because the same way, well, it's a coin flip, but it's probably a less of a coin flip with the judges who have had some type of qualification to judge. But let's say with normal, regular humans like we are, it's a coin flip on how people claim they judge stuff. Like let's say one person sees this and one person sees a person walking forward, and just because they're walking forward, they think that person won the fight. For example, in a Floyd Mayweather fight where he fought a high-profile guy. This one is probably, well, let's say De La Hoya versus Floyd or Floyd versus McDonough won. But it's more of a coin flip when you say, hey, regular humans judge the fight, because so many people have different views and you know, like it's based off on whatever it's based off on versus like, let's say judges who have some type of training, they at least should have some uniform training. You would think that they would have some uniform training, which I would imagine it is in the form of judging, you know, like fights beforehand and then going through some type of apprenticeship that allows you to judge, and then other people say, yes, you're able to judge.
So they have to take a course, actually, to judge.
Yeah, it may be like that way. They may have to go through, like, some type of course in order to be approved to be part of the judging for these fights or whatever it is. But, you know,
they have to take the course. But so I just want to echo what you're saying, bro, because I think you're onto something. And this is the thing. I think what James is saying is one part of the equation, right? And, you know, James, I think you were there, but for the Peterson versus Felix Diaz fight, all right, so I was there live, and I was sitting ringside, actually, right next to, like, a few seats down from Adrian Broner and Barry Hunter or whatever, right? So when that fight was happening, it looked to me like Lamont Peterson was losing. So at the final bell, I was like, yo, don't tell me this dude lost to Felix Diaz, right? And I'm thinking that you lost.
Yeah.
He won. I go back and I look at the joint on TV, and I'm like, yo, how would I ever have come to the conclusion that the guy was losing? But I sat there ringside and watched it. But he was, you know, there were some rounds where he was leaning on the ropes, and all I could see was his back, right? And
right.
Then, you know, when I go watch it on TV, and I'm like, yo, Lamont, you know, clearly won that fight. So I completely agree with that. Right? You know, there should, if I'm not mistaken, when there's a judge on each side of the ring, except for one, right? Obviously, because there's only three judges and four sides of the ring, but they're not all sitting next to each other, right? I mean, they're one on each side of the ring. All right, so, you know, I can certainly see how, you know, three judges come to three different conclusions just based off of that. In addition,
yeah,
you know, to that, you know, you know, the angles versus, you know, the different angles of the judges and the different angles, you know, of, you know, ringside versus TV. I think that's an issue. I also think a lot of these fans are just not educated on what the criteria is. And the optics of a fight is very possible to look very different than the mass of the fight, you know. And, for example, you could have a very close fight, and the optics look like, you know, it's razor thin. You know, like, oh man, every round could be close, but every round, you know, that was close could have been given to the same guy, and it, you know, the scorecard looks like he dominated. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that plays a part in it too. You know, certainly I think a lot of these guys on, you know, that are just on the internet typing probably don't.
And to your point though, I also think that we're highly influenced, whether we agree or not, with whatever the announcers say. Like, whatever they say, that subconsciously or unconsciously biases us. Because, you know, like, I'm almost sure I wanted to hear the Canelo fight with the sound on, but unfortunately I saw it with the sound off. But I wanted to hear it with the sound on. But I'm pretty sure had I heard it with the sound on, I would have given the close rounds to Golovkin.
Yeah, and you know that's absolutely true. I think a lot of folks are influenced by what the announcers say because they don't know how to put themselves on that. You know, and you know, I won't lie. There was a point in, you know, in time where I was, you know, listening to the announcers, and I was influenced. I mean, back then, I think the commentary was a little bit better. You know, and one of my favorite commentators back then was Emmanuel Stewart, but because, you know, I always felt like he kept it real while the other ones were, you know, just kind of going with the agenda on HBO. But, you know, there was a time where I would, you know, listen to what they would say and then get it. But then there was, you know, it started to come time where I'm like, wait a minute, this dude is saying shit that I'm just not really seeing, right? Like, you know, why are we watching two different fights? You know, especially, you know, Lampley on Pacquiao fights or whatever the case was, or
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Even on some of the Floyd fights where they were just hating, you know, it becomes real obvious at that point. But more so than what you think is happening in the fight at the moment, I think the commentators are projecting their own other biases on the fans. And these biases travel, you know, from fight to fight, and, you know, create a different narrative of the fighter that, you know, just isn't the reality. You know, like the whole, you know, Floyd doesn't, you know, fight anybody in his prime, which is, or he ducked this fighter or ducked that fighter until, you know, this fighter and that fighter got old. But if you go back and look at the, you know, the commentary, both Jim Lampley, Roy Jones, and was the old dude that Floyd, that wanted to kick Floyd, that Merchant, right? All three of them, you know, we're saying that Shane Mosley wouldn't want to fight Floyd because Floyd was too dangerous of a fighter and was high risk and no reward. And
right.
I think even Merchant was like, do we really think that Shane Mosley can beat Floyd? All right. But then, like, you know, a couple of years later, the narrative is, you know, oh, Floyd waited until Shane Mosley got old. And these are the same guys saying that.
Yeah, exactly. And that was, you know, pretty much like when he was about to leave, you know, he was about to leave HBO. So
HBO, yep.
I think they Rigondeaux wrong.
They do have that influence. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because to say he's not exciting, like, people don't appreciate him, but stuff he does is on par. Like, okay, what's my boy name who they call the Matrix, who has good footwork for dancing? Lomachenko. So Don't get me wrong. Lomachenko is very graceful. Like he's like a matador. You could tell he took dancing classes when he was younger. But when you watch Rigondeaux and he slip punches and then move in and out and then also hit you, it's beautiful. Like, don't get me wrong, Lomachenko is beautiful, but it's more of like a, like he's doing like a dance. Like he's doing like a dance. But Rigondeaux, it's like, okay, so the difference is Lomachenko does it mostly on offense. Rigondeaux does it mostly on defense. Like, Lomachenko does do it on defense too, but his defense is not as visible as you can see it with Rigondeaux. But Rigondeaux does some cool stuff. Even though I know it's muscle memory and he does these probably similar moves, he probably has four or five moves that he can do, but when he does them and the person swings, it really looks like the Matrix. And
yeah,
the dude be breaking people's jaws. He broke a few people's jaws, right? Say he's boring. He knocked the last few people out. Yep. Broke people's jaws.
Yeah, I mean, that was the point where I was totally disgusted with HBO at that point. And I was seriously thinking about canceling my HBO subscription over that. I mean, the week before was what, Pacquiao and Mayweather Pacquiao, right? And so now they've got, you know, this card, which I think was only a week or two later, that had Rigondeaux on it. And all they kept saying was, oh, yeah, you know, this is about as boring as the fight last week or, you know, or whatever. And everything just went right back to hating on Floyd, but still down in Rigondeaux and calling him boring. I mean, this is a dude who, you know, I forget the fight, his opponent that particular time, but he KO'd him, like, in, you know, seven or under, I believe. But I thought KOs were exciting. You know what I'm saying? You know, when nobody can hit Lomachenko, you know, all of a sudden it's, you know, he's the Matrix. But when this guy can't hit Rigo, right, now all of a sudden it's, oh, this is boring. All that means is you want to see the black fighter get beat, but you don't want to see the white fighter get hit. Right? And there's just really no other explanation, because I don't want to say that there's no real skill difference. I mean, because, you know, you can really parse that out. But, you know, up front, you know, to the layperson, there is really not much of a difference. Both of them are, you know, very defensive fighters. Both of them also are very good at offense. Both of them are, technicians. They're not brawlers. Both of them come forward. Both of them, you know, have pretty good punch output. There really isn't, you know, what really is the difference, and why is it consistently that it's the black fighters you call boring, right? Because Rigo doesn't really fight like Floyd, but you call Rigo and Floyd boring, and Lara, right? So, it's always the fighters with the darker skin.
But even with that, you have other guys that, you know, aren't necessarily considered as boring, so to speak, but they don't put them, you know, on the high regard in comparison to other fighters. Like, for example, Terrence Crawford. You don't see them, you know, praising Terrence Crawford as much as they, you know, praise a Gennady Golovkin or, you know, a Sergey Kovalev, or, you know, Canelo Alvarez. And he's a guy that, you know, as a guy that, you know, fights southpaw and conventional, can fight many different ways and many different facets, but he doesn't necessarily get the credit in comparison to, you know, the other fighters that I mentioned.
Right. He doesn't get any credit. You know what I'm saying? The dude, you know, is undisputed, and they're still trying to say that a 9-1 fighter is P for P number one, and they're telling this guy that to his face. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Get out of here. Get out of here. Like,
Hey, I was named one general for retiring. Somebody said that crap to me. You do everything you can in the world.
Yep.
And it's wild because the bottom line to it is these are the same guys, right? Teddy Atlas, right? These same guys who are sitting there and saying ridiculous things like Floyd cannot be great until he moves up two-weight classes to fight Golovkin, right? Which is a ridiculous assertion. Yeah, he said that back when Golovkin was just saying all kinds of nonsense, like I'll fight anybody 154 to 168, and then all of a sudden when Ward says let's do it, he's like, I just meant that for Floyd. I want to go down to 154 and fight Floyd. So it was right around that.
Yeah, he just said that, didn't he?
Trying to put the pressure of Golovkin, on Floyd to fight Golovkin. Just ignoring the fact that this man can't even make, the minimum weight required, let alone the maximum weight requirement. I mean, even if Golovkin came down to 154, you know what I'm saying? Floyd entered the ring against McGregor at 149 or whatever after a 2-year layoff. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, if anything, that should have been the point where he came in at a higher weight. This dude is not, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't make any sense.
It just wasn't going to happen.
They create that standard for the black fighters. Oh, Rigondeaux's not anything until he, fights and beats him. But once he fights and beats Lomachenko, then they're going to have, another excuse, or whatever the case is. But, they're doing the same thing with Terrence Crawford. First they said he's nothing until he fights Gamboa. He destroys Gamboa. And it's always the next thing. So he rises up, does everything you ask him to do, right? And he still can't get the prize. Andre Ward does everything you ask him to do, goes up in weight, beats Kovalev. I mean, the first fight, I can understand people thinking it's close. I actually scored it 8-4 or 7-5. I favored 8-4 because I gave Andre Ward, the first round, which a lot of folks gave Kovalev the first round. And, and that's the 8-4, 7-5 difference. But I scored it in Andre Ward's favor. And he won, right? Then they're like, all right, well, a win in a close fight is not good enough, which I always thought that fight was going to be close. I didn't think that Ward was just going to straight up destroy a guy in the first fight. But after seeing Kovalev, his mentality, after that, I knew he was going to get destroyed in the second fight, especially when I saw his media workout. I was like, oh, my goodness, this dude's about to get stopped. So
now
he goes out and stops the guy. And they're still making
what happened in the media workout?
The dude had to, he wasn't doing much, and then he kept stopping to take breaks. So, he just really looked like he wasn't conditioned at all. And it seemed like he was,
It's different than what he normally, how different was that from his normal media workout?
So the media workout for the first fight, he seemed like he was training a little bit more intensely. And this is Kovalev I'm talking about. But in the second fight, they had throughout the entire camp, both Kovalev and John David Jackson had been putting out videos of them doing work. I don't know if you remember, James, but I remember posting one of those videos and saying, yo, if this is what he really looks like on the mitts, this dude's going to get destroyed, right? And, some people were like, oh, they're just putting stuff out there and, just to whatever. Then in the media world, he was on the mitts. He looked horrible. He kept having to stop. He kept having to take breaks. He was trying to do ab work, just regular crunches. I mean, he did like two, sets of like 10 or whatever, which, if you compare that to, any other fighter, I mean, Ward was like killing the ab workout. His workout, just looked shit. I was like, this dude. And the other thing was they kept talking about how he overtrained for the last fight, so he was really cutting back for this fight. And I'm like, he cut back too much.
But the difference was he had the Olympic trainer for the first fight, which helped him, obviously.
So he brought in a conditioning coach, a different one, for the second fight.
But I'm saying the first one they claim he had some credentials of the of an Olympic trainer or something, right? For the first one.
Yeah, he did. Is a black dude with dreads, actually. He was his trainer. And so there's a YouTube video where he gets interviewed, you know, and talks about it and how, you know how he felt not being called back for a second fight or whatever the case was.
How did he feel?
I mean, he was just talking about the dude didn't want to put in the work, you know, even in the first fight. He was a little lazy and controlling about the workout and just didn't seem like he wanted to put in the work. That interview was given, I think, right before.
That whole thing for Kovalev on that second fight, I mean, he didn't really seem motivated at all. I mean, there was just everything going on behind the scenes. They had the whole promotional thing going on, promotional back and forth. You know, he talked about, you know, Ward not doing this, Ward not doing that, but all, you know, all in the same issue or the same case. You had Kovalev basically getting, you know, peanuts as far as like what Kathy Duva and Main Events was going to pay him. So it was like he had that on top of it and, you know, other things going on where he necessarily wasn't, like you said, wasn't really training like he should have. So it was all basically falling apart for him there and before that second fight. And then in that second fight, he just basically got blown out. Real quick here, number one, we're basically in the overtime section of the show. And I wanted to get into the whole thing with Andre Ward here. And second, just wanted to, you know, notify that we had another caller in here. Erico 813 in the background. What's going on with you, man?
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Terrell calling from Tampa. Once again, glad to be a part of a great show. And I'll leave it to you guys at that point.
All right. So I'm going to jump into it here. What you got, Mike?
So whatever became of his contract, like, was that true that he only got, like, the pay-per-view? I mean, not the pay-per-view, but was it a pay-per-view? He only got, like, a TV sales or something like that?
Yeah, he only got the backside.
Yeah.
So that was true.
Yep.
Respect Andre Ward for being able to split up his team, you know, to have everybody checking and balancing everyone else, as opposed to putting all your faith in someone and they say, I'll be your lawyer, I'll be your accountant, I'll be your manager, I'll be your advisor. You know, that's
yeah, I mean,
but
yeah, because the thing was, I mean, it's still out there. You know, just looking at, you know, what they have on from CBS Sports, where they released the, you know, the purse sheet there from the commission. And remember, Andre Ward got $6.5 million out of that before the fight happened, and there was nothing listed for Sergey Kovalev. So, yeah, all of that stuff was for, you know, the back end. So he only got, like, what it was, like around $60-something thousand dollars or whatever it was for that particular fight. I think that's what it was, like $60-something thousand dollars, because, you know, the whole pay-per-view itself didn't necessarily do well at all. So he got just basically the back end of that thing for that particular fight there. So that's, you know, all he was able to get. Going into the discussion here in reference to Andre Ward, of course, we were hit with the announcement that Ward retired from the sport of boxing. He basically said that, you know, if he wasn't able to give it his all, you know, in the ring or whatever it is, and, you know, not fully be engaged in the sport, then it was time for him to, you know, roll out. And so, you know, with that, he rides out, you know, undefeated, 32-0-0. Of course, he had those two wins against Sergey Kovalev. He, you know, was able to defeat Mikael Kessler, Alan Green, Saki Obika, Arthur Abraham, and Carl Froch in that Super 6 tournament. Also defended his super middleweight titles then after the Super 6 was done against light heavyweight champion Chad Dawson and was able to get a TKO victory there. And then, you know, had a fight against Edwin Rodriguez before suffering an injury and going through the contract dispute with him and Dan Goosen back at the time. And the thing was, it was like, you know, a lot of people are talking about, you know, he had untapped potential. He could have did this. He could have did that. But if we go into, you know, what happened with that lawsuit between him and Dan Goosen, what it was is that something where he was in the middle of, you know, an agreement with Dan Goosen and with a another company with Square Ring. So you had Dan Goosen there on one side and Square Ring on the other side. And so it was like, well, Goosen wanted to have complete rights of, you know, Andre Ward's fights. And, you know, Leonard didn't want that to happen, and Andre Ward didn't want that to happen. So it was like, you know, going back and forth in between those two, and that's what hung them up in most of those cases. And in the other ones, there was like a lot of, you know, instances where they were able to, you know, try to see if they could make a fight happen in 2014, and they just didn't, you know, they didn't do that. And so, you know, they had guys like, you know, the Saki Obikas, the Anthony Durrells, James Zegales, and others, and they weren't able to make that happen. And this is like back in 2014. So he was able to like basically explain it all out. And so even in that interview, he was saying that, hey, he wanted to stay at super middleweight. He was not a light heavyweight, but with all the things that weren't able to happen, or all those fights that weren't able to happen at super middleweight, he had no choice but to go up to light heavyweight once he was able to leave that contract with Dan Goosen, Goosen to the promotions, and then roll with Roc Nation. And so once he got that and then went over to light heavyweight, it was basically him against Sergey Kovalev, and then there was just about like no one else out there. Because once that Sergey Kovalev fight or rematch or trilogy happened or whatever it was going to end up, there was going to be nobody else for Andre Ward to fight, because there was no way that a Roc Nation fighter was going to fight somebody advised by Al Haymon. So, I mean, here with Andre Ward, great fighter, first bout at Hall of Famer, but, you know, it's almost in reference to what's happened with the business of boxing, is that, you know, with the business of boxing, you're not able to fight certain fighters out there when you could have had the chance. But, I mean, all in all, it was a great career by Andre Ward. He was able to prove time and time again that he was going to be the better fighter against a lot of these fighters that he went up against. So that's pretty much, you know, how I felt about Andre Ward. I'm going to start with Jack. What do you think about Ward's retirement and his overall impact in the sport?
So, I mean, I was a little saddened by it. You know, I really thought the dude had a lot left in the tank. I was looking forward to seeing him, you know, versus Stevenson or whoever was next. But I really wanted to, you know, when he was interviewed by Teddy Atlas standing next to Terrence Crawford, said Terrence was motivating him to go out and get that other strap. And I was just looking forward to seeing that. But no, I think he has a great body of work. I think, you know, he's definitely a Hall of Famer. You know, just, you know, looking forward to seeing what he does next. And seeing, you know, also seeing what, you know, what Virgil Hunter, you know, does next, and, you know, where he focuses his efforts and energies. But yeah, I mean, the dude had a great career, a bunch of great fights. I've been a fan for a while. Probably my favorite Ward fight might be him and Chad Dawson. He looked unstoppable at that point. But yeah, man, you know, was happy to see him go out on top.
All right, cool. Next, Mike Grady.
So I try not to believe in conspiracy theories and then like that, but speaking on what you just spoke on, Jack, I think that's what you said, right, Jack? That's your name, Jack?
Yeah, that's me.
Okay. So, nevertheless, Ward said in that interview that Terrence Crawford made a fire light up in him because he saw all of the praise or, you know, the accolade or the attention that was coming across. And so it was something that he said that made it seem like, you know, hey, watching you do all this, it's making me want to go out and, you know, do what's necessary too. And so throw that out there, and also throw out that his trainer, Virgil Hunter, said Ward could beat Anthony Joshua, which I do think he could beat Anthony Joshua. All he got to do is take him to deep later rounds, and Anthony Joshua wouldn't last. I mean, as long as Ward don't get knocked out early, he could win the fight just by taking Anthony Joshua in later rounds. So throw that out there, too. I think Ward is getting smarter and smarter as his career goes on. Like, okay, let's say he in his contract with Roc Nation, and I don't know the particulars of his business, but let's say for some reason he want to get out of that contract. Then what's the – do you automatically get out your contract if you retire, or is there a clause that says that you get out your contract, which allows you to go with another, a higher bidder or something like that sooner than later? And then, you know, does that allow you to be able to fight Anthony Joshua or – I don't know. Like, I just feel like there might be an ulterior motive behind him doing this. Or at least I hope so. I think it's strategic.
Yeah, I heard that maybe he was retiring to get out of a contract. I mean, I haven't seen any substance behind that, but that's what some folks are saying. If he gets out of his contract and come back.
Yeah, I don't know how his contract worked out with Roc Nation, so I don't know if that'll – you know, do as far as like if he retires and that breaks his contract with Roc Nation or not.
And I don't have no basis behind what I'm saying. I just kind of feel that how he was acting when he saw Terrence Crawford, you know, do something historical. Historical, don't get me wrong. His career is already historical. But what's tried and true is that he does not get the amount of credit that he deserves. And he sees that. He knows that. But please believe he also knows that if he does go to heavyweight, can nobody, and he win the title against Anthony Joshua at least, can nobody, you know, take that away from him. So I think that he's probably doing something to make his legacy be in the same breath as Floyd or even Roy Jones or something like that.
Maybe. You just have to, you know, see if he's going to be able to do that, you know, after a year, you know, a year layoff or 2 years layoff. I mean, he's already been, you know, had a run where he's, you know, out of commission for about 1.5 years. So what would another one and a half year break do for him, you know?
It ain't him getting beat up.
And the other thing,
it's his body resting.
And the other thing with Andre Ward, you know, he does have the skill. He does have that. But does he have the overall the marketing appeal that Floyd Mayweather has? Is he able to change his approach like Floyd Mayweather did? I mean, you know, Floyd Mayweather kind of like approached the fight game like Andre Ward did, you know, in his early parts of his career. But, you know, once he started talking trash and, you know, kind of like verbally embarrassed Arturo Gatti and then embarrassed Arturo Gatti in the ring, then it was when he like kind of changed up his persona and then eventually got, you know, his big fight against Oscar De La Hoya. So let's see if, you know, Andre Ward, if he really wants to do that same thing, if he has it within him to do something like that. Terrell, you got any thoughts on Ward's retirement?
Yeah, definitely. I just want to I think we all feel the same way about Ward. When he announced his retirement, I was definitely saddened to hear about that news. And the reason why, because you want more, you know. That's the thing about it. We always want more and more and more from our champions, the people that are at the pinnacle of their careers and stuff like that. But one of the main things that you've already spoken on, James, is the fact lack of I won't say quality opponents, but lack of opponents for him to help define his career. It's just not out there. That we already know that Triple G avoided him. We know that. But going forward to 160, 168, 175, who's out there that's going to really help enhance his brand? I can't think of not many names out there at all, you know, at this point. And just like you guys are talking about, it certainly seems strategic that he's retiring right now and possibly coming back for a comeback within a couple of years or something like that. And how old is Ward again? 34? What is he?
Yeah,
he's around that range.
Yeah, so yeah, and like I said, and keep in mind, he's out for a while with those promotion issues and injury, of course. So still, and at the same time, you look at his fights. He has not taken beatings in the ring. That's not the type of fighter he is. He's that smart. He's never taken a beating. I mean, keep in mind, he is undefeated. So, I mean, but you look and you can if you really consider his career and look at his resume of the and the quality of fighters that he's fought. He had good fights before the Super Six, and on top of that, the fight opposition in the Super Six, Kessler, Frock, people like that, you know, and even rough and tough guys like Sakio Big Fika, Edwin Rodriguez, I forget the guy's name. Ward has a solid, top-notch resume. I got a lot of respect for this dude, the fact that he remained undefeated, amateurs and pros, and now he's going out on his own terms. Kudos to him. But one thing in regards to the prospect of going up to heavyweight, I think you guys can probably appreciate this. If that was to happen, you probably want to assimilate Ward to a fighter back in the day like a Chris Bird. You guys know Chris Bird. He was like he's definitely an undersized heavyweight, but he's a good boxer, excellent boxer. And he definitely, and despite that, despite his undersized, he made his mark in the heavyweight division. So that's what I would kind of assimilate Ward to, a Chris Bird. But Ward, of course, is definitely a better boxer than Chris Bird. But my only concern about that is you got a guy that's fought in that light heavyweight in his most recent fights, and you consider his body style, his frame. Ward was to go to heavyweight, what would he be at? 210? 215? I would hope 220, but I doubt that. So I would project him around 210, 215. Once again, in the model of a Chris Bird. So, and how does a small heavyweight project in today's heavyweight division? When you got your super heavyweights, people fighting at 235, 240, 250, right? So it's all about can you take a heavyweight punch, things like that. It's a lot of things that you have to consider. Like I said, 215, it's okay, but he would have to be fast as I don't know what and have somewhat of a decent pop in order to command the respect of a heavyweight, because if you don't, a heavyweight's going to walk right through you, period, despite your boxing ability. You know, so all in all, I love the career that Ward has bought us. I love all the fights that he has bought us and his many, many concepts. And yes, he is undervalued in today's market, and we know that. But it's good just to appreciate him now while you got him.
So to Terrell's point, though, if Ward goes to heavyweight, he would pick the injured duck. He wouldn't – Ward is not stupid. Ward's team is not stupid. They would do what James Toney did. And I guess he beat Ruiz, right? That was James Toney who beat Ruiz. Or was that Roy?
Roy did.
Which one beat? Roy, okay. Who did James Toney beat at heavyweight?
He beat Holyfield.
Okay, he beat Holyfield. Was that at heavyweight, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so nevertheless, he would pick somebody who has a deficiency that he could capitalize on. Yeah, there is the risk that he could get caught with the one punch and get laid out flat cold, but let's say Anthony Joshua's deficiency, he has no win. Joseph Parker ain't special, you know, from what I can see. You know, it's easy for me to say as a person who's sitting on the couch every day, but you get what I'm saying? Comparatively speaking, he's not special. Somebody like Deontay Wilder is too much of a wild card. Yeah, he wild. Yeah, he, you know, the skill is not there, but his punch is real. You know, people sit there gyrating on the floor because they get knocked down. His punch is real. Let me see somebody else who is up there. Those are the only ones, right?
The thing with James Toney, he did fight John Ruiz, but he got caught with a substance, so that fight ended up being a no decision.
Oh, for real? Okay, I do remember. I was about to say, I remember him doing the shoulder roll. He was popping him. I was about to say. So they both fought Ruiz?
Yep.
Okay.
And keep in mind that if Ward does come to heavyweight, he's not going to come back in and to heavyweight, announce heavyweight fight, and have a immediate shot at the title. He's going to have, he needs to have a good three, four fights to get ranked within the sanctioning body in order. And once again, yeah, you got a name, but you still have to get in line. He's not going to walk right into a title shot. Not going to happen.
Well, see, that's why I think his retirement comes in, because behind the scenes, I think in boxing, you could position yourself one fight or so from the heavyweight fight. Like, you know, I don't know what you need to do, but I think it's possible outside of saying that you got to fight.
If he fights like a highly ranked contender, and wins, and he could, you know, get positioned to be part of a title fight, you know, especially if the money's there. If you know, people are interested in making that fight happen, then they'll make it happen. You know, as long as the money's there and people are interested in it to see if Ward could do it, then it could happen. You know what I mean?
But is the money I think if Ward goes up to heavyweight, man, this dude needs to fight like Floyd did against Diego Corrales, man. You know, he's got to take that kind of fight approach, you know, in order to kind of survive there. I think he's really small, but I would love to see it.
True. Yeah, it's just that, you know, I'm not sure, like, where Andre Ward would end up as far as, like, heavyweight. Like, y'all were talking about what weight he would end up being at once he is able to go up to heavyweight, because – you know, being there at 215 or something like that in this type of era in the heavyweight division may not work. But it's just something that remains to be seen. One thing I wanted to touch on here before the end of this podcast, just wanted to get an update on what's in store for November 4th. Of course, earlier this week you had an official announcement, media press announcement of the WBC heavyweight title fight that would be coming up between Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz. Deontay Wilder was able to make the appearance there in the press conference, and we've already had a couple of, you know, verbal jabs back and forth between the two. So that's something that, you know, we're looking into or looking forward to over at the Barclays Center. Of course, you know, Deontay Wilder is saying something like, "Hey, please don't mess this up by, you know, taking some illegal substance." And then Luis Ortiz said, you know, in response, don't mess this up by getting caught with marijuana too. So, you know, the whole verbal back and forth is going on between those two. But in reference to the particular card, like I was saying last week, they would have the IBF super lightweight title that was vacated by Terrence Crawford on the line with Sergey Lipinets. He's going to end up fighting Akihiro Kondo for that IBF super lightweight title. Of course, you have that WBC number one contender, Bermon Severn, was able to take the set-aside money so that Wilder Ortiz could happen. He will be fighting Dominic Brazil in that heavyweight fight. And at first, we were going to have Daniel Jacobs return to the ring on that particular card, but now he has been signed by Matchroom Boxing, or Matchroom Sports, over here in the States, who's, you know, headed by Eddie Hearn. And, you know, with that, they say that they are going to have Daniel Jacobs' next fight on HBO. It was pretty much announced on the card with Lenarius Campbell that that Jacobs will return on HBO. It'll be sometime in November. So Daniel Jacobs is off of that card for November 4th. So I'm not sure what other fights would be in store here, but we got like a good amount of weeks or so, you know, before this particular card happens. So we may get some type of intriguing fight placed in here as well in anticipation for Wilder against Ortiz. But I mean, my whole thing with this card is that, you know, Daniel Jacobs being able to get out of that particular card and be featured on HBO. I think, you know, a lot more stock has been put into Daniel Jacobs after the Gennady Golovkin fight.
Yeah, and just on speaking on that, it's kind of laughable with HBO because Jacobs has been out there. They've had a chance to once again get behind a good solid fighter and promote him. And what did they do? I'm glad that he's getting an opportunity back with them now, but like they had a chance to get behind him and push him. And just imagine the fights and exposure that Jacobs could have had after he came back from the cancer and things like that. But we already know HBO has their certain type of fighters they look for that they choose to get behind, and it's just a shame. And now, I mean, and HBO is, and that's why they're at this point holding on to the being relevant, because they're about a couple fights away from being irrelevant in the sport. If they're not there at this point already, for if they didn't have like their pay per view arm, and the name credibility, HBO would be gone within a couple years, you know. But kudos to Jacobs for getting a good deal, and HBO for still trying to hold on.
Well, I think that, you know, this may be, I mean, this could have been a little bit related to it or whatnot, but, you know, they had, like, that specific, like, Cold War between, like, HBO and Showtime or whatever it is, and there was also a Cold War between HBO, the HBO executives, and Al Heyman and Al Heyman managed fighters. But that was kind of like there around when Ken Hirschman was the lead guy for HBO Sports. So when Ken Hirschman kind of like left, it kind of seemed like the new regime, so to speak, wanted to open things up or whatnot. So they kind of like opened the door for, you know, fighters that are managed by Al Heyman to be, you know, on HBO. So, for example, you had the Gennady Golovkin-Dominic Wade fight that happened a while ago where, you know, Dominic Wade was a guy that was managed by Al Heyman, and you were able to see, you know, guys like, the twins were out there. The Watson twins were out there, and Sam Watson was out there with Dominic Wade in that fight between him and Gennady Golovkin. So you might be able to see a little bit more going on between Al Heyman managed fighters and HBO now since that Ken Hirschman and that regime is gone. So that was something that I wanted to add in there.
Yeah, also that that lawsuit between Al Heyman and Top Rank was resolved. So, you know, That was also part of those politics.
Yeah, true.
I know that did get resolved. Deontay Wilder knocking Luis Ortiz out. That's what I'm looking forward to. What say you, James?
We'll see. We'll see what happens there in that particular fight. I have to see if I'm going to be able to make it there on November 4th, you know, over at the Barclays Center. There's, you know, of course, going to be a lot of activity over in New York in that particular weekend. Plus, you have, you know, that card that's going to be October 14th at the Barclays Center. And in December, you will have Lomachenko versus Rigondeaux on December the 1st, I think like the second Saturday of December too. So it's going to be a lot of activity going on over there for that area. But I am looking forward to the fight between Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz to see if, you know, what happens with either fighter, if Deontay Wilder is going to be able to get a big win on his resume, or if Luis Ortiz is finally going to be world heavyweight champion here, you know, for his career. So that's something that we'll be looking into and seeing what happens in that case. On that particular note, I was just going to be closing out the show. I don't know if anybody had any closing remarks that they wanted to get out.
No, this is, I just want to reiterate what you just said. Definitely looking forward to the excitement of the Ortiz-Wilder announcement. So interested to see what happens with that fight and to see the outcome of that fight, because the outcome of that fight is definitely going to shape the heavyweight picture going forward into the first quarter next year. We know that Parker has got his win this weekend, so now we got another heavyweight fight with a title on the line. And also, when is the Joshua fight? When does he fight the Russian or whatever kid again? When is that?
That will be the week before October 26th.
Okay, so we got a lot to look forward to in this last quarter of the heavyweight division. So with once all these fights transpire, we're going to have a good look to see what the map is of the heavyweight title for early next year. So it's exciting. I can't wait fight by fight.
Yeah.
This is Jack, man. I got to say that 2017 has probably been the best year in boxing since in maybe the last four years at least. And I know we had a real good year. I think it was 2013 or whatever. But this
yep.
2017 has been a great year for boxing. Bad year for the casual fans, though.
Hey, to his point, though, do you think that is because of Al Heyman's Let's Take Boxing to, you know, network TV? I mean, not network, but primetime TV. Do you think it was that great because everybody had to pretty much bring their A game since Al Heyman made boxing more accessible to the casual fan?
I say no, and
I think
it's really like
because of the matchups.
Well,
both.
And I think it's going to be. I think it created a cause effect type of thing, because if Heyman wasn't able to do, you know, what he did there in order to, you know, provide those matchups on network television, you probably wouldn't have had Top Rank do what they did as far as, like, move to ESPN. I mean, of course, they had the thing with HBO, their little back-and-forth spat with HBO, but, I mean, you can't, like, say that Top Rank's move to ESPN wasn't influenced by what was happening here with Premier Boxing Champions. You just can't. And now it seems like here with Premier Boxing Champions that, you know, kind of like things are kind of taking shape as far as like the managed fighters are concerned, and that now over the past, you know, six, seven months or so, a lot of those fighters are ending up fighting each other to create big fights because either, you know, Heyman's getting his hand forced to make sure that these fights happen, or there's, like, you know, no other choice for these fighters to, you know, go except for fighting each other. You can't, like, have mismatches, you know, every single fight card there. So I think that's going to be something good there for the sport, you know, not just for this year, but in the years to come. All right, so on that note, I'm going to end this episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. Be sure to catch the next episode that is going to be here next week. We're going to get into it as far as like another matchup in the World Boxing Super Series next week. And, you know, be able to see if we can get any more news and notes in reference to the sport. But like I say at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit, and I can hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, I'm out. Thanks for calling, y'all.
All right, bro. Later.
Easy.